Drums, please. Summer sessions in session, expect the unexpected. I'm talking to minutes to seconds, it's podcast perfection. Keep you guessing what methods I'm messing with the new section. And it's the dopest podcast on earth, best you rep. So, yeah, we on, tell me that we on. Yo, this is the dope show. Yeah, we on, tell me that we on. Yeah, this be the dope show. Yeah, we on, tell me that we on. Yo, this is the dope show. Yeah, we on. Tell me that we on. Yeah, this be the dope show.
Dope show.
Play the ghost exclusive.
What up, what up, what up, what up?
Oh, it sounds so fresh, though. Sounds so fresh, so crispy. Welcome to the G-Splash Summer Sessions, a.k.a. the G6, where we kick you six pop culture news stories of the week. Whatever. I'm your host, Bradley Baxter, and always riding with us in the clutch. Katie's back one more again.
I'm back.
Yes, and this is Summer Sessions number 19 of the dopest podcast on earth.
This the dope show.
Today we're chatting a little bit about the QTCs, what's being called and labeled lately. But mostly Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is Tarantino's number 9th film. I was looking at his IMDb page like right before we started the show, and I noticed
it's beefy.
Yeah, I mean, it's beefy, but he's got technically three projects in the works, and this whole retirement at 10, like, I don't know if I see that. It's like, I don't know, it's like,
yeah.
Can you really hang up the jersey?
Right. Well, I mean, we've had many an athlete who said they're retiring, or actor, and it hasn't happened, so. I don't put much weight when somebody says that they're done after a certain amount, because I've never actually seen anyone stick to it. He'll make the rest of the projects.
Especially when your projects are still doing really, really well.
Right, especially when you're still making tons of money and you're in demand and there's tons of talent that want to work with you, you're not retiring. It's not
happening. I mean, yeah, he doesn't really mess with anybody lower than an A level. So before we get into all that,
yes,
all that good stuff, all the jelly and the donuts, as Charlie would say from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. A couple announcements. I'll just get into announcements real quick. Episode 20 will be next week. We'll be talking Dobbs and Shaw for all you Fast and the Furious fans.
So excited.
You a big fan of the Fast and Furious series?
I love the Fast and the Furious, and I love Idris Elba and Jason Statham. So they could be reading the phone book, and I would go see that movie in IMAX.
Yeah, so this is actually the first kind of spinoff. This universe has had a really interesting, what do you call it, circle of events?
Arc.
Turn of events? Turn of events, I think is what it is. Tokyo Drift is like the worst one.
I will fight you. I love Tokyo Drift.
We'll talk all about that stuff next week on Summer Sessions G-Splash.
It's the dope show.
Let's get into some news. Let's crack it out. Yeezy McBride, Danny McBride, stopped by Jimmy Kimmel to share some anecdotes about moving from L.A. after 2 decades and placing himself among the noticeably different vibes of South Carolina. McBride mentioned that he got a call out of nowhere from Kanye West, and this is what he said.
One day, I got a phone call out of nowhere, and the voice sounded familiar, but I wasn't sure it was. And I was like, hello? He's like, this is Kanye West. Is it really? I thought it was a joke, and he basically said that he was a fan of mine and wanted to come hang out.
He's just coming to see you?
Yeah, he had an idea for a project that I think was a pretty brilliant idea.
Can you say what the idea was?
He wanted to do a movie about the story of his life, and he wanted me to play him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's great.
After he said it, when I read the article, though, I was like, that sounds stupid. But then I thought about it, and I was like, it kind of would be really fucking funny, and it's not a bad idea to see Danny McBride just acting and going through Kanye West's like story of events with all the crazy shit that's
folding,
just being
folding khakis at the Gap at first.
See, the way I see it is like I'm picturing Danny McBride in like the all red runaway fit that Kanye wore with the thick gold chain. And him just like wiling out at the MTV movie or music awards, just like wiling out and just, but like in a Danny Bride kind of acting way. And I think that to me, it sounds fucking hilarious.
Yeah, no, whatever it's going to be, I think it will be worth
watching.
It'll be,
you think it'll actually come to fruition, or is this kind of like a thing, an idea that gets tossed around and then never happens?
I don't know, because Kanye West rides so far forward thinking that I sometimes wonder with our current cancel culture if he's not on the verge of some sort of implosion.
Like, you think something else will happen to, like, maybe prevent him from this making this
move?
I don't
know. Yeah, that's the only thing that I could see stopping him is something happening that people are like, we're done.
Word. Well, speaking of cancel culture, you may have remembered a thing called MoviePass. Yeah. Regal has finally stepped up to the game, and on Friday, they announced that they're launching their own version of an unlimited movie plan. That should be a pretty decent deal for anyone who sees more than one movie a month. But here's what you should know. We've talked a lot about MoviePass on our podcast, all the way from the riding high when I was paying. You know, I don't know if you know this, Katie, but I was actually one of the first people to be on MoviePass, and I was paying at one point like $50 a month for unlimited movies.
Really? Yeah.
Then it blew up with a whole $10 thing, and then it imploded. So
you also once worked at a movie theater, didn't you?
I did work at a movie. I actually worked at Regal.
At a Regal.
When I was in college. Anyway, but here's what you should know about the plan. You'll pay either $18 or $23.50 a month for unlimited movies. So there's no, much like the AMC plan, where it's only three movies a week. This is unlimited, and there are three tiers. They're based on location, though. So, for instance, a person like me who lives out here in New York, I have to get the top tier account. Katie, I'm not sure about...
I'm going to flatter myself and say mid-tier. We're the mid-tier.
But you, it's based, so it's based on location right now. So you either have to get the highest tier to go to every one of them, or if you're like living in a smaller market, you can buy the $18 a month pack. There's some really interesting rules in here, but that's just kind of how it is. There's some concession bonuses and a 50-cent convenience fee for each ticket. Wow, this is already like turning me off to it.
Right. This is not unlimited.
Right, like I got to pay 50 cents for every ticket. The convenience fee on tickets are a joke to begin with. It's like, oh yeah, things got easier for you, so we're going to charge you for that. Well, going green.
If you ended up seeing a movie every day, that's 15 additional dollars. This puts your plan,
right,
after taxes and all that, at like $40 a month.
Right.
Which is so cheaper than buying a ticket for each and every one. But those hidden fees, like if people think 50 cents, but if you see a movie every day, that's $15. That stuff adds up.
Right. But at the same time, like you're still saving, like it depends on where you live. But like out here, movies are like $18. So if you pay 15 and see five movies versus paying 18 times.
Right.
I mean, it's an improvement for sure, but it doesn't to me sound applicable. And this is the big thing. There's surcharges on special formats, which is like 4DX and IMAX, whereas AMC, there's no fee. It's just, the only difference here is like, I can't see unlimited. I can see three movies a week.
Well, and for me, three movies a week is more than enough.
Turns out like
if I was retired, well, yeah, this, I mean, for you would make sense. You'd go to multiple movies a day.
I will say this, though. I do favor Regal Cinemas, and I was waiting for the day that they came out with the subscription plan. I was like, yo, if they do that, then I'm in. But this plan versus my AMC plan, I do not like. I see a lot of movies, but right now, like three movies a week has been fine for me. You know, I still able to see stuff before we do the show. The convenience fees is, I mean, paying an extra $3 or a dollar or whatever, paying anything just to upgrade a movie on IMAX when I can just see an IMAX right now for nothing, like with no fee, that defeats the purpose.
Yep, I agree.
That's my take on that stuff. You guys know I love that stuff. But always letting you know how to maneuver. And of course, you could probably do what I did when I had MoviePass and like buy a ticket to something else and sneak into the other show.
Bradley. This show does not support illegal activity.
It's not illegal. It's a life hack, Katie. Come on.
It's not a life hack.
Okay. No one's ever snuck into bought a ticket to one movie and snuck into the other. I mean, now it's a little bit harder because they have assigned seats.
I did that once, but it was simply so I could go see Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire before it came out. But that was a one-time exception. Thank you very much. I bought a ticket to Troy and saw the Harry Potter movie instead. is a secret screening.
Brad Pitt is going to come for his scalps.
Fine by me.
Speaking of horror stories, AHS 1984, that's American Horror Story 1984. They're flipping the genre, or their series anyway. The newest installment of American Horror Story, subtitled 1984, it seems to be a traditional slasher, more so than the sprawling TV series it has been. I mean, the trailer very much looks like the first Jason.
Yeah, very much. Camp Crystal Lake, Camp Redwood, yep. I don't care what it is, I'm there.
You love this show, right?
I've seen every episode of every season. I love. This might be my favorite television show of all time.
I kind of knew that, and I really wanted to get your opinion on nostalgia timeline shit that's kind of, it's like a big thing right now. It's obviously a hot thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just saw Stranger Things. Are we still trying to see stuff take place in the 80s? We have Wonder Woman coming up.
American Horror Story, you know, horror is in the name, and one of the major genres of horror that they haven't done is the stuff that came out of the 80s. You know, they've done haunted houses, they've done the asylum, they did a carnival. They've hit all so many creepy topics that at some point in the life of the show, they would have to be doing something like this, in my opinion. So I think that it ends up just being something that's in the zeitgeist, and it's not necessarily specific that they were like, oh, we got to get on this 80s thing. I think it's just happening everywhere organically, and this was the next step for the series to take.
I don't know if this is still true to the show, but a lot of it was based on real events, or like a real kind of, like they would take a real story.
Yes.
I think it was a
very much so.
Which was the one that was it, Asylum, that took place in the mental home in like the 50s or something? And like,
yep. Yeah. And all like so many of the things that they were doing.
I knew about that story before that came out.
Historical.
Where like the girl was a reporter and she wanted to get the breaking case. Yeah, yeah.
That house where Kathy Bates buried the body, like all of that is New Orleans history. So they've always taken elements of things that have happened and incorporated them into the show in a really amazing way.
Yeah.
So I can't, I'm here for it. Here for it.
Knew you would be.
Can't wait.
Speaking of waiting, man, you're killing it with me with these segues. I'm liking it. Even though they're kind of, they're not the greatest, but they're good enough. STX has pushed the Chadwick Boseman-led crime thriller 21 Bridges back 2 months from September now to November 2019.
I'm bummed.
It's the second time it's been pushed back. 2019 hasn't been good for STX. Their Untouchables remake and The Upside, which was with Walter White and Kevin Hart. Actually, a really good movie. It was a splash. It hit unexpected numbers in the box office back in January. But their animated Ugly Dolls movie grossed only $27 million on a $45 million budget.
It looked cute.
Did you go see it?
No.
It's not cute enough.
No.
And it didn't impress anybody. They've since delayed a number of their films to either late 2019 or 2020, including Drax's action comedy, My Spy, a.k.a. Dave Bautista, and now Black Panther. 21 Bridges has also been delayed again a couple of months.
Yeah.
This is also a movie that's produced by the Russo brothers. Could it be like a promo? Like, they're still on the in-game high? Are they trying to... I don't know what's really the motive here, is other than like, you can't say that your movies aren't doing well, so we got to push them all back. It's got to be a timing thing, I imagine.
Well, and you would think with Chadwick Boseman, that's going to be a pull, like the movie will be successful. But I do have to say, it's like
for some reason, they announced the delay right after Comic-Con, after they played some footage from the Russo Brothers Hall H panel, rather.
Really? Yeah. I want to see the movie. I'll see it when it comes out. I was hoping to see it in September. I guess I'll see it in November.
But speaking of Marvel and Disney having the best year ever, Disney's made more money in the first 7 months of 2019 than any studio has ever made in a single year, earning $7.67 billion to date worldwide. God. It's an understatement to call that a major accomplishment for the House of Mouse. It's more likely a testament or testimony to how powerful Disney has become as a monolith. But it's an achievement that will inevitably won't roll over into 2020. A big part of that impressive number comes from the record-breaking success of Avengers Endgame, which pulled more than $2.8 billion worldwide and surpassed Avatar, which Disney also owns, as the highest-grossing movie of all time. Captain Marvel was another unusually high earner.
As it should be.
The sixth highest-grossing Marvel movie of all time, crossing $1 billion at the box office. The company's remakes of The Lion King and Aladdin performed exceptionally well at the box office. This year alone, Disney has the top five gross movies.
And think about it. When they release Disney Plus in the fall, this is going to be the biggest year of a company, culture company ever.
Right. I mean, it's no...
And I'm sure 2020 is going to be nothing to...
I mean, they own...
Turn your nose up at.
I mean, they own everything.
They own everything.
So, like, how could it not?
Everything.
But I think...
Because they have Disney Plus coming out and then the Star Wars movie coming out. I mean, they're going to...
Oh, yeah. I forgot that comes out this year, huh?
Mm-hmm. Let's put a prediction on it. Put a prediction on what they're... Let's put a prediction on how much you think Disney is going to make this year and we'll revisit it.
Let's see. When is it? July? I think they'll get to 10. 10 bill?
Okay.
I would say that...
I'll go with 10 bills and $1.
Price is wrong.
I'll go with... I'm going to go with 11. I'm going to go with 11 billion.
This is a terrible segue, but... Nero and Caprio, longtime Scorsese collaborator Leonardo DiCaprio, will star in The Killers of the Flower Moon, which was a book that Katie has read. But now it's also being reported that another longtime Scorsese collaborator, Robert De Niro, will be joining that picture as well. Killers of the Flower Moon will have a plot that centers around the FBI's rise to prominence after investigating several suspicious deaths of Native Americans around land sitting atop newly discovered oil. How's the book, Katie? Splash, trash, or meh? Go.
Splash. It's really hard because it is such an absolute tragedy. What happened to these people and how they were exploited, murdered, poisoned. People would come in and take over for them. They had to have white custodians if they had a certain amount of money. I mean, it's just unbelievable the level of racism and exploitation they faced. So it's hard to say, like, this was a really good book because it's such an ugly topic matter.
Yeah.
But it's a story that has to be told. And if there's a director that will do it justice, it's
Scorsese. Interesting. Mm-hmm. When I read the plot lines and stuff, I was like, it's kind of ballsy to do this movie right now. But
it's a story that has to be told. And I think it will be very eye-opening to people what happened to the Osage tribe at the hands of these people who were entrusted to take care of them.
Interesting.
And didn't. It's a phenomenal read. Highly recommend.
Well, I'm anxious to see the movie. I always love Scorsese. Speaking of Leonardo DiCaprio, let's just get into this main topic.
Speaking of Leo.
Leo Cap.
Now for all the jitterbugs from Pico Rivera, babe, I'm going to cut one loose for you. Hey, Hector, your mama looking for you.
We are talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's latest run, number 9, if you will. I've seen this movie twice. This movie was a little bit long.
You saw it twice?
I did see it twice.
Oh, Lord.
I didn't get to see the cutscene, and, like, I was filling out this survey for the studio. It's the biggest grossing Quentin Tarantino film. Inglourious Basterds had, I think, 40 something, and this one got like 45 million in opening weekend.
This opening weekend.
Yeah. It's 84% certified fresh, 72% from audience. Let's talk about the review. We are a little bit different on this one, right?
I don't know.
Why don't you tell us what the story is and try and be spoiler free, and then we'll give it a score and then we'll talk about some spoilers.
It is a story of Rick Dalton, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, and his stunt double, Cliff Booth, and them facing a declining industry with regards to the Westerns that Rick Dalton has been in. It happens to be that Rick's house is right next door to the house that Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski are renting, and it ends up tying in the Manson family and those infamous murders that happened on Cielo Drive in the summer of 69.
That was perfect. What would you score the movie, Splash Trash or meh?
I'm meh in it. I'm going to give it a meh.
I kind of thought you would.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this movie a splash.
Of course you are.
Why would you say that? I'm usually not a good, I'm not a light movie critic for the most part.
No, But
at least I don't think
it's Tarantino. Oh, so it's Tarantino. So it must be genius. Splash.
No, I wouldn't say this movie. I wouldn't say this movie is genius. I wouldn't. I really liked Brad Pitt's character. There's things in this movie that I absolutely didn't like, and
okay,
we'll get it. So now we'll talk some spoilers. Let's talk about some of the things we liked, didn't like. I will say that there is a absolutely slow plot at one point in the movie that you're definitely like, is something going to happen in this movie?
You saw my notes. I actually wrote, what is this movie even about?
And I thought that I thought that too. And it's definitely a Tarantino move to like have a bunch of characters and then wait for the tie-in at the end. Much like Pulp Fiction is like that.
I went through a serious Manson phase. Like, I own the Manson Family Jams albums. Like, I read Helter. I went down a rabbit hole with Manson. And so I knew that that's exactly what that was, even when I saw the preview. But there are multiple people in my life who saw this film and didn't know what any of that was. So I can't imagine sitting in the theater not knowing that these huge murders are about to happen and knowing that that's what this build is. But literally watching it and being like, when's something going to happen? Because I knew something was going to happen. I knew all of that from my knowledge of the Manson family and those murders. And so
right.
I know people who sat in that theater and were like, what?
Were you?
And then didn't know until the credits.
Were you expecting to?
I'm not saying who it was.
Were you expecting a lot more Manson involvement? I was, because they advertised
him. Just because he's such an enigmatic figure that I don't think, and this is my opinion on Tarantino, I don't think Tarantino would allow such, I don't know what you'd even call Manson.
Tarantino's
like to occupy his screen.
Tarantino's to had both
from the story he's telling.
Tarantino's had Manson both would do that. Adolf Hitler and Charles Manson in his movies.
Yeah,
but well, they both had very small
I just
roles.
Think that he right. I just don't think that he would allow Manson to be an actual character in his film because it would be then another story that he didn't write. And although he does the twist and the you know, the rewrite of how those things went down. Yeah. I just don't think that he would ever think, I'm going to give this guy screen time. Because it's the Tarantino show, and then it'd be the Manson show. Because
right,
Manson is just as... I can't think of the word. Why can't I think of the word that I want to use to...
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying in the sense of, like, because I've just because we've talked about it off the pod, but, like, you have, like, a... What do you call it? A narcissistic
a
take of from,
right. Yeah, I mean,
from Tarantino. You get that vibe from Tarantino.
It's all about him. Like, the whole thing is Tarantino's universe and Tarantino's world. And in order to understand it, you have to see all the... I don't think he'd put Manson in a front runner thing. And I think that the Manson girls, would be much more interesting to Tarantino than Manson, which was how he portrayed the story.
I definitely thought, and especially the second time I saw it, I was like, we kind of don't really need to... The only reason Sharon Tate is in this movie is to tie everything together at the end, right? Like, we didn't... Like, all her scenes are like when she's in the movie theater, it has no part to the story.
I think in doing research for the podcast, I watched interviews with Margot Robbie and Tarantino, the cast. And, you know, the whole purpose, according to Tarantino, was this love letter to Los Angeles and to that era of filmmaking at that time. And so I think it makes sense that she's in there as a balance to the intense masculinity of every other portion of this film. So I think it makes sense that she's in
it. But it doesn't add to the story.
Obviously.
I don't think so.
I think it adds to the story. I think it adds to the greater story of Los Angeles, 1969, what was going on in Hollywood in movies, and there needed to be some sort of balance between the Western, Cliff, Rick, Al Pacino, like all of that. I think having Sharon Tate in that, and of course there has to be some sort of gruesome violence because it's a Tarantino film, so why not take a look at that? I mean, Tarantino was, I think, 6 the summer that this happened, and he grew up in Los Angeles. So I have a feeling that that's a very impressionable event in his mind. And obviously it's still a story that we're talking about today. So I think it makes sense that she was in the film.
Yeah, I just think there's scenes that could be removed from the film that wouldn't change anything. Is what I guess is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, I know she needs to be in the film to kind of tie events together. But because the movie's pretty long. The movie's like almost 3 hours long.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot happening. There's a lot of storytelling that's happening.
That's what I'm saying. Like watching her watch herself in a movie makes no difference in the plot or story. Like you could see her. Watching her watch the movie, going through the moves and stuff, like none of that makes anything, doesn't change the story. If you see her buy a ticket, go to the movie and come out, like it's the same thing.
No, it's not.
What are you talking about?
I disagree.
How?
Ring the boxing
why,
bell.
Why is watching her watch her own movie important?
Because this whole story about Rick Dalton is like him watching himself on his descent and his decline. And like right now, Sharon Tate is beginning the ascent of her life. And so to have those two things, because this is essentially a movie about movie making and the golden age of Hollywood in Los Angeles, I think that those things both need to be told in the story of what this movie is about, not just this linear story of Rick and this job and then the Mansons. It's like his vision for the film was about more than that, and I think they absolutely needed to have that in there.
Hmm. Disagree to agree, plus, whatever.
Did that exact same thing. So Tarantino went to the Bruin when True Romance came out. He was on a date and he went up and was like, oh, hey, I wrote this film. And they were like, who are you? And so his date was like, this is Quentin Tarantino. Like, do you see it says writer? Here's his license. And then people came up and were like, oh my gosh, can we get your autograph? Wow. And they got to go into the movie for free. So again, of course, like Tarantino has to his own spin on everything. So I think that also that I loved Sharon Tate going to the movies and watching herself. I mean, Rick Dalton and Cliff went and watched himself in
that's another scene though,
FBI show.
Like all he needed to say was, I got a six pack in the back. That's what I thought we were going to do. And like, I didn't need to watch them watch the show. I get that.
That's
like,
what this movie's about, is these stars.
But there was enough of that. I'm just saying that there was enough of that. You could have made this movie easy 2 hours and still, like, knocked it out the park.
This is not just a movie. Art, Brad.
Oh, my God.
Even though I met it.
You didn't even like this movie, and you're like, defending it more than I am.
It's not that I didn't like this movie. I just know how I feel about Tarantino.
Oh, so you're bringing personal vendettas towards Tarantino into your...
Obviously. Tarantino... If you asked him about me, he'd be like, I don't like her either. So I just think...
He'd probably be like, sorry, I didn't put a wizard in the movie.
Oh, sorry, there wasn't someone wearing a cape and fighting the evils of the world. I just think that this movie wouldn't have been anything worth watching if I wasn't watching Leonardo and Brad and Margot Robbie and seeing all these cameos and Kurt Russell. If this had been his first film, it would have been an absolute meh. Nobody would have cared. The only reason people are really hype on it is because it's a star-studded cast that you want to see in movies. You'll see anything with any of these actors in that.
I think the story's good, and I would say that people like nostalgia, number one, that's just like the number one thing people are clinging to these days. I would say that the cast is like the frosting on the cake for this movie. I think there's elements that don't really matter, but I think the time frame and the timeline of Hollywood, people would go see if this was his first film. Obviously, there's gonna be some completely different Easter eggs and this whole thing about his universe, which I want to get into. I think the movie's would have been good if this was his first film.
But I think that the testament of a really good movie or a really good director and a really good writer, if you're just looking at a director and a writer, not any of the other aspects of it, is if you could plug a bunch of different people into it and still be able to have it as watchable as it is with
Paul Fiction?
These A-list stars. Ugh. I've never seen Paul
Fiction. Oh my God, get out of here.
I told you
that. All right, we got to move on. Let's talk about, since we talked Pulp Fiction, let's talk about this Quentin Tarantino universe. He's come out and said that he's got two universe. He's got a universe within the universe. One is movies that people in his universe would go see. So that's movies like Death Proof. That's movies like Kill Bill. For instance, you see him in Pulp Fiction. Katie wouldn't know this because she never saw the film. You see Uma Thurman talking to John Travolta about a pilot she did called Fox Force 5. And it turns out that it's the exact story, or there's a film adaptation of the conclusion of Fox Force 5. In Pulp Fiction, she describes Kill Bill. And then Kill Bill gets made.
Yes.
So Uma Thurman's character is the actress in that, much like Denise Richards.
Kill Bill?
Yeah, Denise Richards, Lucy Liu.
Liu, yep.
Robin Givens.
Vanessa Williams.
I don't know why I went there. I was thinking of Eraser, I think. If you've seen the movie, you would know, but you haven't, so yeah. So this is a tie-in, which I actually really liked, was you see Kurt Russell in this movie, and he's the stunt coordinator, as well as his wife, who is actually a real-life stunt person.
Who did the stunts.
She's been a stunt person more so than an actress, but she was also in Death Proof. Both of them are in Death Proof. It's being tied together as, like, they were acting in those two characters that we saw in that movie were acting in that other movie, Universe Within the Universe.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool.
I guess. I don't.
Why?
I just think, like I just picture somebody sitting in their basement writing their own fan fiction and, like, tying it back to their other fan fiction and, like, linking it all together. Like, I just, I don't know.
This is so funny to hear you say, because, like, this is the, or pretty much the originator of tying universes together.
No, but it's, like, his made-up universe of things about him. It's not anything other than,
what are you talking about?
Him, like, putting his,
it's got to come, like, from somewhere.
Right, but it's his own, because the Easter eggs in this film were just Easter eggs for his other films.
What do you, that's like every Marvel film is an Easter egg to another film or another comic book.
Not every.
What do you mean?
It's just,
they're full of them.
Oh my God. I just don't like Tarantino. I just don't like Tarantino. I don't like his films.
So that's what I'm saying.
And I gave this one a math because it was watchable and I enjoyed the cast.
Look.
And you, the Manson family.
Rule number one, like, you can't go into a movie like, I'm going to hate this movie because I don't like you.
I didn't go into it, I'm going to hate it at all. I went in with my notebook ready to see a film. And it just reminded me of why I don't really enjoy Tarantino. I feel like it's the Emperor Has No Clothes. Everyone's walking around being like, oh my gosh, genius, brilliant.
No one's
He's a visionary. And some people are like, I don't get it. And but you feel like you're not smart enough or not cool enough if you don't like Tarantino. And I'm like, the Emperor Has No Clothes. This is just an average movie.
I don't go into that deep. I don't.
Well,
I'm not saying I like Tarantino
deep
movies. I think he's done some really great stuff. Is this his best movie? No. But I didn't like The Hateful Eight either. Like, there's movies I don't
see. I found The Hateful Eight more enjoyable than this one.
Oh, I disagree.
Well,
but, like,
got a lot of disagreements. What, like,
you never saw Pulp Fiction, so can't even call that movie. But did you see Django?
No.
Django was dope too, man. Like, all right, this is a perfect example of Katie. So I have to use this as evidence because this is the kind of conversation that Katie kind of had with me about Marvel before she saw
the movies. No, that's absolutely not the conversation we had at all. I'd seen multiple Marvel films and loved them. I was just overwhelmed with the thought of having to go through all the films. And if I was going to go through them, I was going to do it right. I was going to watch all of them in chronological order. And I was like, that is too much. I cannot do it. It's freaking me out. It's making me anxious. That's why I didn't do it. Not because I was like, oh, Marvel's crappy.
Why haven't you seen Pulp Fiction or Django? Then you see The Hateful Eight.
Because I just haven't. There was never like if someone was like, let's watch Kill Bill, I'd be like, okay, let's watch Kill Bill. And
have
I would give
Kill
it
Bill?
A fair shot because so many
you haven't
people
seen Kill
have
Bill?
Seen, I haven't seen Kill. I've told you all of this.
All right.
I told you all of this.
All right. Well, I was Oh, man.
But I've seen True Romance, and I did like True Romance. I've seen Natural Born Killers. I've seen Hateful Eight, which I've seen Inglourious Basterds. I've seen Tarantino movies. I just haven't seen all
what'd
of
you
them,
think of
and it's not because... What
did you think of Inglourious Basterds?
I thought it was campy. I thought it was funnier. I thought it was entertaining. I love World War II films of really any kind. And so his twisty take on ending the war a year earlier, I thought that was great. But when I say, oh, I want to watch that again and again, no. I saw it. I was like, that was good. But I wasn't, you know, hype on it.
She wasn't in that Tarantino bag.
But I don't want you to compare my hesitation in watching all 22 of the Marvel films in order with how I feel about Tarantino.
This is what gets me, is like, I think that there's definitely Tarantino films that are better than a lot of Marvel films.
Maybe. we also disagree on which Marvel films we think are the best.
That's different, I feel like. Anyway, I don't even know how to I don't know how to bring this back, to be honest with you. There's gonna be I'm gonna have to like figure out how to cut this one up because I don't even know.
Why? People are gonna be loving this conversation.
We'll see.
Spiry.
All right, let's talk about the scene with Bruce Lee and Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie. We see Bruce Lee talking about Cassius Clay, and if he fought him, he would cripple him. And Brad Pitt starts laughing, and they do this contest. And this is actually a flashback in the film. Rick is supposed to be on Green Hornet.
Yes.
And pulled some strings to get Cliff on the roll to be the stunt double. And so they're hanging out and figure out this contest that whoever gets knocked down twice loses, best of three kind of situation. This is where we get to see Bruce Lee kind of make his cameo in this movie. He kicks him. Brad Pitt falls down, gets up for round two, and then he just grabs him and throws him into a car. I absolutely loved this scene. And I
did not.
I thought it was entertaining and it was funny and it was fun.
I thought it was entertaining and funny and fun if it had been Bruce Lee. So many of Quentin Tarantino's characters are caricatures. I wrote that, I think, multiple times in my notes. And having a caricature, I feel like, of someone like Bruce Lee, a person of color, women, I think it's just really hard to do in an appropriate way. And I feel like Tarantino's really indelicate. This is not how Bruce Lee was. That's not Bruce Lee's legacy. I like the idea of the scene. I just wish it had been another stunt double mouthing off to Clint, who's kind of on his decline. He's older. He's in his sunset time as a stuntman. I think that would have been entertaining. But to somehow posture Bruce Lee as this arrogant fighter who would just like physically fight someone over a disagreement of words, that's not who he was. And I feel like we need to have more respect to Bruce Lee's legacy.
Clearly.
And that's why I don't like Tarantino.
Clearly, Katie has read the articles about Bruce Lee's daughter coming out and being like, and actually his biography, the dude who's been writing biographies or something about him, Bruce Lee, that he's
I also so went through
Kung
Fu phase where I learned a ton about Bruce Lee, and I know that this isn't how Bruce Lee was.
My thing on that whole subject, I was leading to that, but you just took the cake, so we'll go there. Obviously, the story has come out.
I'm never invited back on G-Splash.
The story has come out that Bruce Lee's daughter was not happy about the way that Bruce Lee was portrayed in the film because of exactly what Katie said, that he wasn't an arrogant person and...
No.
And that just wasn't his character. However, my thing is, like, I think everybody knows that, and that's fine. Quentin Tarantino has been nothing but, like, glorified Bruce Lee throughout, especially Kill Bill. The other side of it is that this is also not this reality. It's a different reality, and you should know that going into these films. Like, obviously,
yeah,
like you said, ending World War II a year early by massacring Adolf Hitler and Inglourious Basterds, like...
But that's a better ending. That's a better... We wish that that's how it had gone down. No one wishes Bruce Lee was an arrogant asshole. The hubris of Tarantino to decide to distort someone as iconic and as revered as Bruce Lee just bothers me. And he does things like that because he's Tarantino and he thinks he can do it. And I don't like it.
I didn't think anything negative of Bruce Lee. After
I know you're not as sensitive as some of us are, but I also think the fact that he was going to put Bruce Lee in a movie in this way and didn't run it by his family again. You don't do that.
That happens all the time, man. Like,
no, it shouldn't,
but it does. This isn't the first time. You shouldn't crucify fucking Quentin Tarantino because Bruce Lee got thrown into a car.
I just don't agree with what he did. Oh my gosh, if people could see me, I wish this was like a YouTube video. My hands are like in the air.
I can only imagine.
It's
going to be the most controversial fucking episode ever. So the ending of this movie, spoilers going forward, is obviously there's an alternate take on what happened in Hollywood for Sharon Tate and whatnot. Obviously, that was a tragedy back in those days. But this one gets flipped on its head. And I absolutely love the ending. I enjoyed it. It was wild. It was over the top in Tarantino fashion.
The
dog food to the face, man. How do you feel about the ending? Like, you love horror movies. You love gore shit. You're definitely not afraid to speak in the movies. In the theater.
So did
you not like the ending of this movie, or like, did you not enjoy it?
Initially, I loved it because there's a part of me that's like, yes, kick their asses. What a good dog. Flamethrower. That's so funny. He still has the prop from the 14 fists. Like, I loved it. And then I loved that it was a different take on, instead of just going through the Manson murders as they were with Sharon Tate and her friends. You know, when I look back on it, there's a couple of things that I'm like, I don't know how I feel quite about that.
Like what?
But so I loved the dog. What was the dog's name? Bridget? Hillary?
Brandy.
Brandy. Bridget, Hillary, Brandy. Okay. I loved that dog. That dog was so stinking cute, and I loved their friendship and their relationship. I just hate that it's like, again, like a pit bull mauling people. People already think terrible things about pit bulls. I think it would have been funnier if it had been like a golden retriever, like eating someone's face off. That to me is funnier than the stereotype of a pit bull. I mean, the violence is so intense and so gratuitous. And Quentin Tarantino has a history of really, really graphic violence against women. And there's two women in this that got attacked way more viciously than Tex did. And Tex had the gun and the other two had knives. So those are things that after re-examining with a fine-tooth comb, I took that stuck in my craw. But
I mean, on
the surface level, I was like, this is awesome. What?
So Tex did get his nuts bit off. It's not like...
He was coming at them with a gun and saying that he was the devil. Which I do love that they kept that to the original. I love that they kept that to the originals. I thought that was fun. Air quotes, fun. I don't know how much you can... You know, I mean, I liked The Hateful Eight, and that movie's wickedly violent. So I liked it, but then there's this other part of me that I'm like, oh, wow, that's a lot of violence. But my first reaction is like, yes, this is amazing. She's on fire in the pool. And then afterwards, I'm like, whoa, wow, someone being lit on fire in a pool. That's really graphic. And that's just who I am.
I can't with you right now. Like, it was entertaining. It was fun. It was funny. It was a homage to a lot of things. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I called it a splash.
I just hear you hitting the sound bar.
Yeah, I know. That's how Chris does.
Always know what you're doing.
And that's what. Now you so know what funny. Chris feels like. Yeah, that's what I do.
I know what Chris feels like. Oh gosh.
I actually talked to Chris today. He's back from his vacation. Doing well.
We miss you, Chris. I've never. Oh,
you've talked to Chris on the through three way speaker.
I've talked to Chris on the pod, and I think he's hilarious.
I gave it a splash. Katie gave it a map. She had a lot to weigh in on her opinion of the movie. Let us know your opinions of the film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Did you like it? Do you agree with Katie's plugs and dissection, or? This is definitely one of my splashes of the year. Katie, not so much, but that's fine.
Nope.
You still gave it a Matt. You didn't call it trash, so you enjoyed yourself at some point.
It's not trash. There were. I loved Sharon Tate. I loved all of the montages of Los Angeles. I loved the costuming.
Music is always great.
The music was fantastic. I did love how he was really true to what the Manson girls were doing in Hollywood and how they got people out to the ranch. I loved all of those things. There's some major things that I don't love, and there's some major things that I don't love about Tarantino films.
Bang, bang. Let us know what it is.
Fight me.
Well, do you say fight me or buy me?
Fight me.
Fight me. Okay. That's going to do it for
do
this.
Do you still love me?
Yes,
3,000 or
course,
did I do?
Of course.
Really?
Of course, of course.
Okay. All right.
That's going to do it. That's going to do it for this episode of G Splash. I got a lot of editing to do. We'll get it down. We'll get it cracking. As always, the gloves have come off. You've heard the sounds.
Ding, ding, ding.
I'm going to leave you with this number from KHJ. Boom. I'm out of here, baby. Peace.
Yeah, we on. Tell me that we on. Yo, this is the dope show. Yeah, we on. Tell me that we on. Yeah, this be the dope show. Yeah, we on. Tell me that we on. Yo, this is the dope show. Yeah, we on. Tell me that we on. Yeah, this be the dope show.
Batman
and Robin
with exclusive news for KHJ listeners.
It's the Batphone secret number contest presented by Boss Radio.
There's a terrific prize for the first KHJ listener to guess the secret number of our Batphone.
You've seen us answering the Batphone on TV. It's a special hotline Commissioner Gordon uses to contact us whenever there's trouble.
There are 7 digits in the Batphone secret number. Listen to what you'll win if yours is the first correct answer received by KHJ.
You'll visit Batman and me at 20th Century Fox and be our guest for lunch at the studio.
Then you'll ride to the Batcave in the Batmobile, where Robin and I will present you with a 1966 console color television set.
To visit us and win the color TV, just guess the secret Batphone number.
Watch for Robin and me on Channel 7 Wednesday and Thursday nights. And keep it on KHJ for more clues in the Batphone secret number contest.